They followed the elephant herds northwards for almost another month. It was as his father had warned him. When disturbed by man, the great beasts moved hundreds of leagues to new country. They travelled at that long striding walk that even a good horse could not match over a long distance. The entire southern continent was their domain, and the old matriarchs of the herds knew every mountain pass and every lake, river, and waterhole along the way. They knew how to avoid the deserts and the desolate lands. They knew the forests that were rich in fruits and luxuriant growth, and they knew the fastness where they were safe from attack. However, they left tracks that were clear to Bakat's eye, and he followed them into the wilderness where even he had never ventured. The tracks led them to good water and to the easy passes through the mountains. Thus they came at last to a river set in a strath of grassy felt, and the waters were sweet and clear. Jim took his sights of the noon passage of the sun on 5 consecutive days until he was certain he had accurately fixed their position on his father's chart. Both he and Louisa were amazed at the great distance the leisurely turning wheels of the wagons had covered to bring them there. They left the camp on the river bank each day and rode out to explore the country in all directions. On the 6th day they climbed to the top of a tall, rounded hill that overlooked the plains beyond the river. "Since we left the frontier of the colony, we have seen no sign of our fellow men," Louisa remarked. "Just that one wagon track almost 3 months ago, and the paintings of Bakat's tribe in the caves of the mountains." "It is an empty land," Jim agreed. "And I love it so, for it and everything in it belongs to me. It makes me feel like a god." She smiled as she watched his enthusiasm. To her he looked indeed like a young god. The sun had burned him brown, and his arms and legs were carved from granite muscle. Despite her frequent clipping with the sheep shears, his hair had grown down to his shoulders. Accustomed to staring at far horizons, his gaze was calm and steady. His bearing displayed his confidence and authority. She could not much longer try to deceive herself or deny how her feelings had changed towards him in these last months. He had proved his worth 100 times. He now stood at the centre of her existence. However, she must first throw off the break and burden of her past. Even now, when she closed her eyes, she could see the sinister head in the black leather mask and the cold eyes behind the slits. Van Ritters, the master of Huis Brabant, was with her still. Jim turned back to face her, and she averted her eyes. Surely her dark thoughts must be clear for him to see in them. "Look!" she cried, and pointed across the river. "There's a field of wild daisies growing there." He shaded his eyes and followed the direction of her outthrust hand. "I doubt that they're flowers," he shook his head. "They shine too bright. I think what you see is a bed of chalkstone or white quartz pebbles." "I am sure they are daisies, like those that grew beside the Kharib River." Louisa pushed Trueheart forward. "Come, let's cross to look at them. I wish to draw them." She was already well down the hill, leaving him little choice but to follow her, although he had no great interest in flowers. A well-trodden game path led them through a grove of wild willows to a shallow ford. They splashed through the green waters belly-deep and rode up the steep cut of the far bank. They saw the mysterious white field not far ahead, glaring in the sunlight, and raced each other to it. Louisa was a few lengths ahead, but suddenly she reined in and the laughter died on her lips. She stared down at the ground, speechless with horror. Jim stepped down from the stirrup and, leading Drumfire, walked forward slowly. The ground beneath his feet was thickly strewn with human bones. He stooped and picked up a skull from the macabre display. "A child," he said, and turned the tiny relic in his hands. Its head was staved in. "What has happened here, Jim?" "There's been a massacre," he answered, "and not too long ago, for although the birds have picked the skeletons clean, the hyena have not yet devoured them." "How did it happen?" The tragic remains had moved her, and her eyes swam with tears. He brought the child's skull to her and held it up so she might examine it more closely. "The imprint of a war club, a single blow to the back of the head. 'Tis how the Nguni dispatch their enemies."
"Children also?"
"It is said that they kill for the thrill and prestige." How many have died here? Louisa averted her gaze from the tiny skull and looked instead to the piled skeletons which lay in snowdrifts and windrows. How many? We shall never know. But it seems that this was an entire tribe. Jim laid the little skull down on the spot where he had found it. No wonder we found no living man on all our long journey, she whispered. These monsters have slain every one, and laid waste to the land. Jim fetched Bakat from the wagons, and he confirmed Jim's first estimate. He picked out from among the bone evidence to paint a broader picture of the slaughter. He found the broken head and the shaft of a war club, which he called a kerry. It had been skilfully carved from a shoot of knobthorn bush. The bulbous root section formed a natural head for the vicious club. The weapon must have snapped in the hand of the warrior who had wielded it. He also found a handful of glass trade beads scattered in the grass. They might once have been part of a necklace. They were cylindrical in shape, red and white. Jim knew them well. Identical beads were among the goods they carried in their own wagons. He showed them to Louisa. Beads like these have been common currency in Africa for 100 years or more. Originally they were probably traded by the Portuguese to the northern tribes. Bakat rubbed one between his fingers. They are highly prized by the Nguni. One of the warriors might have had a string of these torn from his neck, perhaps by the dying fingers of one of his victims. Who were the victims? Louisa asked, and spread her hands to indicate the bones that lay so thickly around them. Bakat shrugged. In this land, men come from nowhere and depart again, leaving no trace of their passing. He tucked the beads into the pouch of his belt, which was made from the scrotum of a bull buffalo. Except my people. We leave our pictures on the rocks so that the spirits will remember us. I would like to know who they were, Louisa said. It is so tragic to think of the little ones who were snuffed out here, with no one to bury them or mourn their passing. She did not have to wait long to find out who the victims were.